One the Hits. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Alice Bryant tells us about COVID-19 predictions in the United States. Ana Mateo brings us this week's health and lifestyle report. We close our show with the next episode of The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
The United States can expect to see nearly 100,000 more COVID-19 deaths by December 1st, unless people change their actions. That estimate comes from the nation's most closely watched prediction model. Health experts say the number of deaths could be cut in half if nearly everyone wore a face covering in public spaces. These predictions show that what happens with coronavirus infections this fall depends on human behavior, said Lauren Ansel Myers. She is director of the University of Texas COVID-19 Modeling Consortium. We cannot stop Delta, she said, but we can change our behavior overnight. That means wearing face coverings, limiting social gatherings, staying home when sick, and getting vaccinated. Those things are within our control, Myers said. The U.S. is in the middle of its fourth wave of infection. The highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus is partly to blame. It has caused a sharp rise in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, and has set back months of progress against the virus. In the U.S., deaths are now above 1,100 a day on average. The number has not been that high since the middle of March. Experts with the University of Washington predict that 98,000 more Americans will die by the start of December. That will make the total number of U.S. deaths nearly 730,000. The prediction says deaths will rise to nearly 1,400 a day by the middle of September, then lessen slowly. But the model also says many of those deaths can be avoided if enough Americans change their ways. We can save 50,000 lives simply by wearing masks. That's how important behaviors are, said Ali Mokhtad. He is a professor of health metrics sciences at the University of Washington and is involved in making the predictions. There are already signs that Americans are taking the threat more seriously. In the past several weeks, the demand for COVID-19 vaccine shots has gone up. The number of shots given each day has climbed around 80% over the past month to an average of about 900,000. More people in the states of Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi got their first shots in the past month than in the two earlier months combined. Jeff Zients, the White House COVID-19 coordinator, announced that news last week. Millions of students across the country are now required to wear masks. And more companies are requiring workers to get the vaccine after Pfizer's shot got full government approval last week. In addition, cities like New York and New Orleans are requiring that people show proof of vaccination if they want to eat at restaurants. Half of American workers support vaccine requirements at work, says a new opinion study from the Associated Press Research Center. Early signs suggest change may already be lowering infection rates in a few places where the virus has been a big problem this summer. An Associated Press study shows the rate of new cases is slowing in Mississippi, Florida, Louisiana, and Arkansas. They are some of the states where first shots are on the rise. In Florida, pleas from hospitals and a battle over face coverings in schools may have pushed some to protect themselves. And late last week, a judge blocked Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's attempt to ban face covering mandates in schools. However, the news is more troubling for places like Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee, West Virginia, and Wyoming. In those states, new infections have continued to rise. Even vaccinated people should be careful, said Dr. Gabby Sousa of Seattle, Washington, who is vaccinated. Days after an August wedding in Vermont, she and other attendees tested positive for COVID-19. It happened even though events were mainly held outdoors, and attendees had to show proof of their vaccinations. Sousa says she really wishes she had worn a face covering. She says she knows the vaccine kept her infection from being severe, but she still suffered through several days of body pains, high temperatures, tiredness, and coughing. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Research done earlier this year found that 1 in 2 people worldwide saw their earnings drop because of the coronavirus pandemic. In May, the Reuters news agency reported that people in low-income countries were especially hard hit by job losses or cuts to their usual working hours. Experts at the U.S.-based company Gallup recently questioned 300,000 people in 117 countries. They found that half of those with jobs earned less because of the pandemic. In a statement, the Gallup researchers said that worldwide, these percentages ranged from a high of 76% in Thailand to a low of 10% in Switzerland. The COVID-19 pandemic has hit some workers around the world harder than others. In many countries, women are overrepresented in low-paid industries, such as retail, tourism, and food services. A study done by the international charity organization Oxfam found that the pandemic had cost women around the world $800 billion in lost wages. Losing income is never easy. For some people, a loss of wages or a job could mean losing a home or not having enough money to eat. This can be true even if a reduction in wages is temporary. There are ways to get through a financially difficult time. Some financial experts shared suggestions with the Associated Press. Manisha Thakur is founder of Money Zen, a company in Portland, Oregon. She teaches people how to manage their money. Thakur says it is important to admit that your earnings have dropped. Do not hide from the problem or put off dealing with a loss in income, she said. This will only make the situation worse. Athena Valentine Lent is the founder of the Money Smart Latina website. She also said it is important to face and accept your money troubles directly and immediately. Lent added that it is important to be kind to yourself. While it may be difficult, try not to let a job loss or a drop in earnings damage your feelings of self-worth. It is also important to know your exact monthly or weekly expenses. How much do you spend each month? This includes even very small things, like riding the bus or buying coffee on your way to work. Then experts suggest making a spending plan or budget and updating it as often as you need to. Finally, the experts say it is important to make changes to fit your new earning level. Stop spending money on things that are not necessary. Lent said, if you don't need it, don't buy it. She suggests looking at your bills. You might be paying for services you might not need. She gives these examples. You might need the internet, but not cable. You might need a phone, but not all the extras on a phone plan. If you want movies or books, consider going to the library to borrow them for free. Or you could have a book trade in your community. Some people do this for clothing, too. Food is an area where you can save a lot of money. Lent suggests to cook at home instead of going to a restaurant or other food places. Other experts suggest buying sale items in large amounts and then freezing some, while others say to cut down on meat, which can be more costly. Make a list when you go shopping and stick to it. Create a meal plan for the week. Research healthy but inexpensive meal ideas. When you cook dinner, make a little extra for lunch or even breakfast the next day. Consider growing your own fruits, vegetables, and herbs. Even people living in small spaces can grow small amounts in containers. Lent said, if you know money is going to be tight for a period of time, start saving money right away. And if possible, look for ways to make extra money. She suggested selling things that you no longer need. Perhaps there is a way to pick up extra work. Thakur has another suggestion for people. Try to have some money set aside for emergency uses. That way, if you face money trouble in the future, you know you will have some money to help keep you going. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to the Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember.
Last time, we talked about the presidential election of 1804. Thomas Jefferson, the nation's third president, was easily re-elected. Jefferson was head of the Democratic-Republican Party, known today as the Democratic Party. Thomas Jefferson had a very good record during his first term as president. He ended many taxes. He paid government debts. And he gained possession of the huge Louisiana Territory from France without going to war. His political opponents were the Federalists. The Federalists were sure Jefferson would win the election of 1804. Still, they were surprised by the strength of his victory. Jefferson won 162 electoral votes. His Federalist opponent won just 14. In the early 1800s, Britain and France were at war with each other. The United States remained neutral. Historian Andrew O'Shaughnessy says President Jefferson did not want to become involved in a war.
He was sufficiently pro-French that he didn't want to ally with the British, but not so pro-French that he wanted a war with the British.
Jefferson also believed getting involved in a European war would destroy all the progress he had made at home. His economic policies had helped to pay much of America's national debt, and he was able to reduce taxes. But staying neutral was not easy. The United States was having trouble with Britain. For many years, Britain had been taking men by force to serve in its navy. Britain claimed the right to seize any British citizen anywhere. The custom was called impressment. Conditions in the Royal Navy were not good at that time, and many sailors deserted. Some went to work on American ships. The American ships were stopped and searched in British waters. Anyone born in Britain was seized. Historian Andrew O'Shaughnessy says sometimes American citizens were also taken.
There was also still something of an imperial attitude in Britain towards America. You know, they were still insisting that some American citizens had been born British. It was often difficult for them to be able to distinguish between their own subjects and Americans.
Several thousand sailors were taken off American ships during the early 1800s. In 1807, an incident made relations between Britain and America even more tense. Britain believed that four of its sailors had deserted and fled to an American ship called the Chesapeake. The United States said the men were American citizens who had been forced to serve in the British Navy. The United States refused to return them. When the Chesapeake sailed out of American waters, the British ship Leopard tried to stop and search it. The American captain would not stop. First, the British ship fired two warning shots. Then it fired all its guns directly at the Chesapeake. The American ship could do little to defend itself. The captain surrendered. News of the British attack spread quickly. President Jefferson ordered all British Navy ships in American waters to leave at once. He told people not to aid the British. He said any person, American or British, who disobeyed his orders would be arrested. In response, the British government announced a new rule. It said Any American ship sailing to Europe must stop first in Britain to get permission. Ships violating the rule would be seized. Relations between the two countries were reaching the breaking point. Impressment was just one of the major problems the United States was having with Britain in the early 1800s. Another problem was trade. Britain wanted to stop the United States from trading with France and its colonies. British warships blocked the port of New York all through 1805. No American ship could leave without being searched. Any ship found to be carrying goods for France was taken north to Halifax, Nova Scotia. There, a British court had the power to seize the goods and force the ship's owners to pay a large fine. In the closing days of 1807, President Thomas Jefferson signed a bill banning all trade with Europe. No ships could enter or leave the United States. Jefferson did not believe that trade embargoes were the best way to settle America's problems with other nations, but at the time, he thought an embargo was the only way to deal with Britain and France short of war, and he did not want war. Jefferson later explained why he thought the embargo was the best choice of action. He said, if American ships had sailed out of American waters, they would have been seized by Britain or France. That would have forced the United States into war. Jefferson said it was far better to stop all contact with these nations until they returned to some sense of justice. Jefferson acted to protect American traders, ship owners, and sailors. Yet those were the people who protested the loudest against the ban. They were willing to take the chance of having Britain or France seize their ships and goods. They could not make any money without trade. The situation quickly turned into a political battle between the Jeffersonian Republicans and the opposition Federalists. Federalist newspapers attacked Jefferson. They called him a tool of France and its leader. They charged that Jefferson supported the trade ban to help Napoleon Bonaparte. One Federalist senator wrote a pamphlet against the embargo. He urged northeastern states to refuse to enforce it. Then he went even further. He met secretly with a British official who was sent to Washington to discuss the situation. He told the British official that Jefferson would be forced out of office because of the embargo. Jefferson simply wished to give the trade embargo a fair chance. He considered the embargo less evil than war. But after a time, he thought, this will not be so. If the war should continue in Europe, and if Britain and France continue to act against us, then it would be for Congress to say if war would not be better than the embargo. Jefferson hoped that the loss of American trade would force Britain and France to change their policies toward the United States. And he hoped the change would come quickly. He knew that the American people would not accept a long ban on trade. A British traveler visiting New York City described what the embargo had done. The port is full of ships, but all of them are closed. Only a few sailors can be seen. Many of the counting houses are closed. The coffee houses are almost empty. The streets near the water are almost deserted. Grass has begun to grow upon the docks. America's northern industrial states felt the loss of trade most deeply. But the agricultural South also was affected. Rich Southern farmers and planters suddenly found themselves poor. Tobacco was one of their major crops, and Britain bought more American tobacco than any other country. Because of the embargo, the price of tobacco fell so low that it had almost no value. The price of wheat fell from $2 a bushel to 7 cents a bushel. Good farmland dropped in value until it was worth almost nothing. Opposition to the embargo was growing. The opposition was strongest in the Northeast. Ship owners and traders believed that the embargo was wrong. They continued to export goods secretly. Some traders began sending goods over land to Canada. From there, the goods were sent on to Britain. Congress passed a law against this kind of trade, but the shipments did not stop. Too many people were willing to violate the law for the large amounts of money they could make by trading secretly with Britain. By August 1808, Treasury Secretary Albert Gallatin had lost all hope that the embargo would be successful. Gallatin told President Jefferson that the embargo was defeated by open violations. Another of Jefferson's supporters gave the president some advice. If the embargo could be enforced, and if the people would accept it, then I am sure it would be the wisest course. But if it cannot be enforced completely, and if the people will not accept it, then it will not serve its purpose and should not be continued. Jefferson, however, was not ready to give up his plan. In his last State of the Union message to Congress, he painted a bright picture of the nation. He reported that American industry was making progress. Many goods that had been imported before the embargo were now being made at home. He said almost all of the national debt had been paid, and he said more than 100 gunboats had been built, enough, he declared, to defend the country. Jefferson said nothing about opposition to the embargo, nor did he talk about the serious economic problems caused by it. He said only that Britain and France still refused to honor American neutrality, and so the embargo must continue. The rest of the nation was not so sure. Congress began debating a number of proposals to either lift or amend the embargo. In the first months of 1809, Congress finally approved a bill. The bill lifted the ban on trade with all European countries except Britain and France. Jefferson had hoped to continue the embargo a little longer and with more powers to enforce it. He was not satisfied with the final bill, but he signed it anyway on March 1st. 3 days later, the 15-month-old embargo was dead, and the United States had a new president.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.